we're having today, because I think it's going to hit about 65.
Yeah, but I thought we didn't have global warming, if you listen. By the way, could lower the TV behind you. It's bleeding in. If you would do that for me, I'd appreciate it. Couldn't hear it till I turned it on. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Mr. Garfunkel, you are a great, great student of FDR. And because of the emergence of Republicans in the last 30 years, or the emergence of conservatives, he gets beat up every once in a while. And that is so unfair and so wrong. First of all, tell us about FDR. Give us the basis of this guy.
Well, I think what people, of course, remember of FDR is a great deal of charisma, a great deal of personal power, charm, bigger than life, a type of individual that came along at a period that was very critical, a very critical turning point in American history. And remember, in the post-World War I era, which was what was termed a return to normalcy, it actually was a term that Warren G. Harding, who was elected in 1920, was a very handsome guy. It was the first year that women could vote, and they voted for him overwhelmingly. He misused the word normality, and he called it a return to normalcy. And if you look at the 20s, you know, this period of wonderful nothingness, as it was described, your two presidents who opened the 20s, Warren Harding, who died mysteriously on a trip back from Alaska, they say his wife, Florence DeWolf Kling Harding, poisoned him, they say. But, of course, he had many affairs. One is known as Nan Britton, but he actually had six or seven affairs and a number of illegitimate children. He was followed by...
Hold it up. Yeah. We have a radio audience wants to know about a number of affairs, a number of illegitimate children. He was Clinton squared.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is that after Harding's death, Cool Cal came into the office. Calvin Coolidge, who had a reputation of stopping the Boston police strike when he was governor. He was from Northampton, Massachusetts. I happened to stay at his house on 19 Massasoit Street in the late 1960s. My friend Henry Littlefield, the great former dean of students of Amherst and a great historian on his own, actually lived in his house in 19 Massasoit Street. And the woman who owned it, it was a two-family house, actually asked him to buy it, but he didn't want it, and he went out to California. I don't think he had any regrets. But interestingly enough, in that period in the 20s of wonderful nothingness, we really had a tremendously inflated idea of ourselves. Our economy had been built on feeding Europe after the war. Our trains, which had been hauling coal and wheat to the East Coast to be shipping to Europe. By the middle 1920s, the blush had gone off the rose. The economy was overinflated. And of course, we all know there was the crash in 1929 actually welcomed Herbert Hoover into office. And Herbert Hoover was not the prototypical, one would think, right-wing troglodyte as a president.
No, he wasn't, although I know he falls under some criticism today. 737 coming up on 738 here in 1460 WVOX. We're talking with presidential historian Richard Garfunkel. Go ahead, Richard.
And of course, the crash came in October of 1929. And by the time the emergence of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you could say that. Remember, Franklin Delano Roosevelt had been elected governor in 1928 to be part of the effort to help Al Smith. Roosevelt had been the nominee for the Democrats and had run with James Cox of Ohio in 1920 against Harding, and had lost, even though he made a great impression on him, on Americans. Most people thought he was one of Teddy Roosevelt's sons. He actually was a fifth cousin and married to Teddy Roosevelt's favorite niece, Eleanor Roosevelt. So he was connected in two ways to what they called the Oyster Bay branch of the Roosevelts, who were Republican. He was a Hyde Park Roosevelt, who was a Democrat. He had gone to the White House at 12 years old with his father, who was a large contributor to the Democratic Party. His father introduced him to Grover Cleveland.
Now, whose father's this?
Franklin Roosevelt's father, James.
Okay.
Took him to Washington in 1890. 1893 or four. He was 12 years old. It was the second administration of Grover Cleveland. And Cleveland, as they left, put his hand on young Franklin's head, and he says, "I give you one blessing, young man. Please don't aspire to this job and have to be president." So I think Roosevelt was, to a degree, an iconoclast or contrarian, and he, of course, occupied the job longer than anybody. But in 1928, Roosevelt ran against a guy named Albert Ottinger, who was the Republican Attorney General of the state of New York, a uncle of Richard Ottinger, who was a congressman here for many years.
Ottinger.
My wife worked for him for 7 years, and he was a liberal Democrat, a very good congressman. But Albert Ottinger was a very conservative Republican, part of the U.S. plywood fortune, and he ran against FDR in 1928.
What did he run against him for?
Governor.
Okay,
Smith.
740 here. Right. We're talking with Richard Garfunkel, presidential historian, specialist in FDR, and Good Morning Westchester. We're going to take a very, very quick break, and we'll be right back with I almost said Richard R. Ottinger, but Richard Garfunkel.
Time to pay some immediate attention to the trees on your property. But who do you call? Well, for almost 30 years in this county, smart homeowners have relied on the Mancuso family's Manor Tree Company. In every season of the year, Manor Tree, based in Pelham Manor, New York, has been the preeminent tree specialist for individual neighborhood homeowners and for the discerning proprietors of the great estates of Westchester as well. Business and commercial owners also know about Manor Tree for tree removal, stump grinding, pruning, shaping, even for quality, clean-burning fireplace wood. A free inspection of your property by Manor Tree Company right now can help protect your beautiful and valuable trees all year long. We invite you to call for a consultation. In Pelham Manor, 914-738-1785. That's Manor Tree Company, 738-1785. They're the best you can find in Westchester.
Hello, this is Arlene McLaren, your neighborhood consultant and host of the Arlene McLaren Show, which is a weekly program which you can hear right here on 1460 AM every Friday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to us and call in and talk with us regarding the issues of the day, business, finance, and government. And if you're in need of consulting services to grow your business or organization, call us at 914-573-2584. Once again, listen live on 1460 AM from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. every Friday evening.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of the Dick Van Dyke Show, Lou Bacardi, head of the Associated Press, Eddie Foy, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
7:42, coming up on 7:43, you're listening to Good Morning Westchester on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. My guest is Richard Garfunkel. He is a presidential historian. His specialty is FDR, although he knows all of them. We're talking about FDR right now, and he will stay with us right through the break at 7:45. Richard, you have returned. Hello again.
Thank you. Getting back to what I was saying, that Al Smith, of course, was nominated for the presidency in 1928. Franklin Roosevelt, in between, had contracted polio after swimming in the Bay of Fundy near Campobello Island. It's an old story. It's been repeated many times. Sunrise at Campobello has been done on Broadway. It's been done in the movies, a very popular version of the story. It reminds me of the time that Cole Porter went to see the film biopic of his life called Night and Day, and they asked him about the film, and he said, "Wonderful film, not my life." Well, Sunrise at Campobello was a wonderful story done by Dory Sherry on Broadway. It wasn't really the real true story, but Roosevelt suffered from infantile paralysis. By 1928, he did not feel he was completely recovered. Al Smith, who was the first Roman Catholic ever nominated for president by a major party, the Democrats wanted an upstate Protestant with a famous name to be on the ticket in New York and help them. In truth, what happened is Al Smith was crushed by Herbert Hoover, who was considered actually a pretty progressive Republican. Roosevelt only won by 25,000 votes, less than one vote per precinct in the state of New York. Became governor, 2 years later, the crash was came about. Roosevelt ran for re-election in 1930, won by 735,000 votes, the largest amount of votes anyone had ever won numerically in the history of the United States.
Right.
Of course, New York State in those days was very, very important state and very large in comparison to the rest of the population of the country, probably had more than 10% of the population of the country in those days, so it was understood. No one thought that record would be broken until Robert Moses, the enigmatic individual, ran for governor against his boss, Herbert Lehman, in 1934. Lehman destroyed him by 800,000 votes, 850,000 votes, and that record stood.
Now, he destroyed who?
Robert Moses, right, in the election, and that record stood until the Johnson years. So Roosevelt became governor again in 30.
Okay, so what year are we in?
We're in 1930.
And he becomes governor.
He becomes governor.
Okay, I want you to hold it right there because we're going to take him when we come back from the traffic and weather with Richard Garfunkel, presidential historian, 7:45 here at 1460 WVOX. Let's talk about how he moved from governor to president and then why he was so special. We'll be right back with Richard Garfunkel. Right now, let's go to WVOX and News 12 meteorologist Bryson Van Eck. Bryson, good morning.
Bob, hello there. Good Monday morning to you. Well, a wind advisory is in effect for southern Westchester County until 10 o'clock this morning. Look out for some strong gusty wind. Showers and thunderstorms will be likely today as a cold front rumbles on through the region. It will be windy and mild with temperatures up near 60 degrees. Tonight, skies will clear on out. It will remain windy and turn colder with overnight lows right around 30. Lots of clouds on tap for your Tuesday. And seasonably cold with afternoon highs back in the 30s. For the Whitney Radio Network, WVOX and News 12 Westchester, I'm meteorologist Bryson Van Eck.
Thank you very much, Bryson. 746, 57 degrees now. The temperature is rising quickly under cloudy skies. Here's Craig Shankman with WVOX Westchester Traffic. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, Bob. Good morning. Thanks. We go back to the Bronx River Parkway. The southbound lanes remaining shut right near Scarsdale Road. Ride north is okay up into White Plains. Not bad at 95 or the Hutchinson River Parkway. No delays with Metro North or the B-Line buses. Now, for Craig Schenkman, shadow traffic on the Whitney Radio Network.
Westchester. Good morning. It is 7:47 here on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. I'm Bob Marone. This is Good Morning Westchester on President's Day, a rainy President's Day. It's cloudy outside. The temperature has risen just from the time I'm on the air from 51 all the way to 57, and it's rising to the early 60s. It may even stretch, as Richard Garfunkel says, to 65. Who's Richard Garfunkel? He is a presidential historian. He is an expert on FDR. Even wears an FDR tie almost every day. So we couldn't do much better than this. He's in the studio for his carryover segment. Mr. Garfunkel, when we last left, it's like a mystery. We had Mr. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, had just won the governorship of New York. And as Ed Norton once said to Ralph Cramden, you're on the air.
Yes, FDR had won re-election in 1930, overwhelmingly, as I had mentioned earlier. He was a reform governor in a very difficult period. The first 2 years, he was in the shadow of the great Al Smith. As a governor, Al Smith was considered one of the greatest in the history of the United States, not only New York State. When they rate governors of all the 48 states in those days, now 50, Smith is in the top panoply. So Roosevelt had a tough shoes to fill, but he did them. He brought in a great deal of hydroelectric power. He followed the reforms of Smith, but he was a cautious governor. But in the period of the New Deal, he brought in a lot of the team that he would later work with in the New Deal, certainly Francis Perkins as his New York State head of Department of Labor, etc. By the time 1932 rolled around, the Depression had gotten deeper, worse. It was impossible. Just to characterize it, 30% of the people, 4 out of 10 eligible workers were out of work in that period of time. The banks were shutting every day. The stock market had lost 83% of its value. Everything that you can imagine was a disaster. In fact, in the year of
83% of its value, 748 right. coming up on 749. Right. We're talking with Richard Garfunkel, presidential historian, here on 1460 WVOX. 80% of its value. No wonder people were leaping out windows.
And not only that, this is the first year in American history that more people leave the United States than enter it.
Is that right?
Yeah, 1932. So it was a disaster. Roosevelt was the heir presumptive to be president because of the job he did in New York, because of his name, because of his stature, because of the great story that he'd recovered from polio.
Let's get to some cases here about him. And I'm even going to skip over his election because I don't want to miss the heart of the man. Where did his idea for the social programs that he's now famous for, where did that come from?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And of course, a lot of it had to do with the character of Roosevelt. Two or three things interesting very quickly. I believe his blackballing at Harvard at the Purcellian Club changed his mind.
Why was he blackballed?
He was blackballed. No one knows exactly, but there were people at Groton School who knew him. He had been home educated to 14 years old. So when he went to Groton School, he was not in the mix from the earliest days. So therefore, he was sort of an outsider. Almost everybody from Groton went to Harvard. This was the elite of the country. Porcellian was a club that his father belonged to. Teddy Roosevelt belonged to. Teddy Roosevelt's father belonged to. And when he was rejected, Franklin Roosevelt said, you know, a man of my stature, my money, my looks, my desire to be part of a club, an unknown individual can block me from getting what I want. You can imagine what the poor man, the man who doesn't have the connections, the man who doesn't have the money can be stopped in our society.
So that accounts for some of the motivation. But where did the ideas come from?
I think the ideas came basically from, if you want to know, an idea that he surrounded himself with innovative people, and probably some of the early ideas could be attributed to the Brains Trust, which were made up basically of three intellectual professors from Columbia University, Rexford Tugwell, Adolph Burley, his son Peter Burley just passed away, who was an influential environmentalist, and Raymond Moley. These individuals, along with Roosevelt, along with other individuals, put their heads together and literally in the first 100 days created most of the ideas and legislation going forth.
For the New Deal.
For the New Deal.
That's incredible stuff. 751, we're with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX talking about FDR. Go ahead, sir.
Well, one of the things, probably the most important critical aspect of it, was the financial markets. And literally two individuals, Thomas Corcoran, a very, very famous individual in Washington, and Benjamin V. Cohen, were two men who wrote the Securities Act of 1933. They literally were holed up in a room for days. And when the 1933 Securities Act came, this was to bring security, sanctity, and a sense of understanding and into the security of the markets. It brought security to the marketplace.
You know, that needs to be amended for what goes on today, but
no
that
question.
For another day.
Right. And, of course, the bank holiday. Remember, banks were closing all over the United States, and no one knew what to do. And basically what Roosevelt did was he created a bank holiday. He convinced people. He had a fireside chat. And literally, after the fireside chat, deposits started to return to the banks. If you remember the movie with Jimmy Stewart about the Great Christmas movie.
Yeah, the Great Christmas.
About savings and loan and the run on the banks. This was happening This was happening all over the country. So the most important critical element, of course, Roosevelt did. And remember something also that the public doesn't know or does not remember. The election was in November, but in those days, the last inauguration at that period in 1932 was March 4th. After the 32 election, it was moved to January 20th. So there was a long period where you had the lame duck of Herbert Hoover, who had virtually no power. Congress had, you know, was against him. And Roosevelt only took office in March after literally 3 months after the election. And it was a freefall disaster. And his great speech indicating to people that the only thing they had to fear was fear itself, really stopped the bleeding. And in the stopping of the bleeding, with all the what we would call the alphabet soup programs that came on, whether it was WPA, PWA, CCC, all these things that really what Roosevelt indicated was he wanted people back to work and he wanted the stability of the farm. The farms, the price of wheat had actually deteriorated to 15 cents a bushel. I mean, it was no one could make a living on the farms. So the two critical elements in America that faced this country that were literally a sword at its throat were the decline and collapse of the farms and the inability for people to find jobs.
7:54, we're talking with Richard Garfunkel here on 1460 WVOX about FDR. We're going to take a quick break. Richard, when we come back, I'd like to hear a little bit more about those social programs and if he saw the future that was in them. We'll be right back with Richard Garfunkel. First, let's check out a couple of messages. We'll be right back.
Got a question. What's the worst thing about buying a used car? Could it be the uncertainty of not knowing what you're really getting? Bingo. Now I have an answer. Honda Certified Used Cars. Their well-maintained late-model Hondas each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with an incredible 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. Did the comfort level just go up in here? Thought so. Honda Certified Used Cars. It's the next best thing to new.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
The Bronx, Westchester, and the Islands Worldwide Forum. This is WVOX, Whitney Radio's flagship station at 1460 AM and worldwide at WVOX.com. From the ancient Latin comes our name, and from the Roman Forum for discussion and debate comes our inspiration. Vox, the voice of the people, America's most honored community radio station. WVOX and WVOX.com.
WVOX, Westchester. 7:56, we're back with Richard Garfunkel, presidential historian, particularly focused on FDR. So now he comes up with the so-called, and FDR we're talking about, we're going through his history, he comes up with the social program, Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. A, why did they work so well? B, why do they still come under such criticism from the extreme right today?
Well, basically, the social programs came in lieu or after the economic programs. And the social programs were literally, to a degree, part of what they called the Second New Deal. The first New Deal was the stability of Wall Street. That was creating the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission. In other words, reducing the risk factors for the actual individual, allowing that individual to invest in the market with security. And this could be talked about for a month on that end of it. The second was the security of the banks, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, very normal, insuring accounts, people giving confidence that these banks would not collapse and fall apart literally in front of their eyes. The next thing was public projects, where they were creating stadium, roads, buildings, public buildings. Davis High School in Mount Vernon had a stadium, a WPA project, etc. Then it was getting people to work in their specific areas, PWA, CWA. In other words, basically putting people to work in the areas that they were expertise. That was another element. The last element in terms of the work and recovery, one could say, was CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, literally taking care of the forest, working on the rivers, working on dams, getting people to work on cleaning up. In other words, getting young men active, rebuilding their bodies. Remember, a lot of the young people had rickets. A lot of the young people were...
We didn't have the hygiene we had today.
Right.
Coming up on 7:58, you know what I want to get to quickly? I want to move on to World War II because I got about 2 minutes left. What his role was in World War II and then how you would sum up his presidency, please.
Okay. Basically, and just to finish on that, in terms of Social Security, you know, we could talk about that for a long time.
Yes, I know.
It's a lot. In terms of World War II, Roosevelt had attempted to prepare the country for this. In his 1937 quarantine speech in Chicago, he talked about quarantining the dictators. The day after the speech, 400 newspapers called for his impeachment, literally wow. because there was such an isolationist spirit in this country. But in the period from 1937 to 1939, the outbreak of the war in Europe, September 2nd, 1939.
You
and
got a minute. Go ahead.
He started to rebuild and started to put money into our arms, rebuilding the battleships, because remember, we had the 16th or 17th
largest army
in the world.
You got 30 seconds. I'm sorry to cut you short, but we got 30 seconds left, 40 seconds. Give me a summary of his presidency.
I think Roosevelt was the first modern president. I think he, as James McGregor Burns termed him, he was the lion and the fox. He was able to create the new Democratic Party and bring balance. He was able to allow labor to have their say at the table. He was able to rebuild the middle class that had disappeared during the Depression. He was able to create the arsenal of democracy. He was able to create the four freedoms, which were the basis of our whole thinking today around the whole world. In fact, his legacy around the world is much greater than Churchill's. It's more his world than Churchill's.
Yeah, and he certainly changed America. Thank you very much, Richard Garfunkel. Coming up on the top of the hour, we'll see you after that with Barry Fritel and our other historian.
This is the flagship station of Whitney Media, live from New York's Golden Apple, 1460 WVOX New Rochelle.
News Radio, I'm Dave Anthony. Benazir Bhutto's husband is vowing to change Pakistan, calling it fate that his wife's opposition party will win as they vote today in elections delayed by Bhutto's assassin.